This week, I'm talking with a woman who I recognize as an unsung hero in her community. Despite running her own business, she dedicates time to ensure the well-being of other children in her community. We're going to meet this lady after I hit that music. Joining me this week is community advocate Elizabeth Hanke. Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming on my podcast today.
I appreciate that you invited me. Thank you for having me on.
Elizabeth, you run a business full time. How do you find time to fight for the kids' rights in your community?
So I do. I own an escape room, which is my full-time business. And I think the reason that I care or advocate so hard is that I found out in running a business that if you do not take care of those problems, they just become larger problems. And so in part, being a member in the community, but also having kids and hosting exchange students from around the world, I noticed a decline in academic standards. And when you're doing more research, it's not just those academic standards, but it's also behavioral issues that aren't being addressed. And it goes further into the way that we listen to each other as a community.
What made you want to take a stand and, you know, speak up for the community? And when you did that, was there any repercussions along the way that could affect your business?
You know, there were two kind of turning points in my life. One is I listened to Brett Weinstein and his testimony as a university professor at Evergreen University and what he went through having students attack him and push him off campus. And then in addition to that, our local school system adopted a bunch of policies based on Portland Public Schools. And I was already very familiar with what was happening at Portland Public Schools.
I'm not familiar with Portland Public Schools. Can you give me a quick little rundown?
Yeah. So they had a high truancy rate. And when we passed our new framework in our school, it was 3 years ago. It was during that COVID period. And they worked with the Minnesota Equity Alliance to pass a framework based off of Portland's. Well, Portland already had high truancy, lowering test scores, and a lot of students leaving their district 3 years ago. And so just thinking, well, gosh, they're basing this framework off of Portland. This is likely not going to go well for our district.
So hold on a sec. They knew about Portland's low test scores before they say, oh, look at that school. We want to be just like them.
Yeah. So how it was going to be, or how it was kind of sold to the district, is that this equity framework was going to create better listening and harmonious relationships through our entire community, and that we listen to the voices first that may not have historically been listened to in the past. But when they passed, or when they did their surveys for this framework, they only surveyed people of color in order to get this framework for this framework. But of the people, it was only actually 3% of our people of the population of the people of color, and less than 1% of the city's population. And then based off of those surveys is how the school district ended up passing the framework.
So taking the race out of it for a second, they sold this framework. Did they show data like, hey, we have great attendance now, our kids' grades are improving? Did they show that data of how great this framework is?
You know, not to my recollection. It was really based on lowering the disparities between populations and not necessarily raising the academic standards among all populations.
Okay, so Portland already had the low test scores, low attendance. They already had this data and they presented to the school system and they kind of spun it a different way, but did they fully disclose what their attendance and their scores were? Because now, as I've been watching the school board meetings myself, we're not really good either. Our readings, math scores are pretty low as well. So are we looking like Portland now? Or was there, I feel like we were sold something that wasn't 100% real, well, like really good for our kids.
That happened during that time is by the time they voted on this framework, they were having in-person meetings, but a lot of the discussion was happening over Zoom and not in person because it was still during that COVID timeline. And I mean, we're meeting over Zoom now, but there is something, some nuance lost when you're not meeting in person, you know, trying to get the timing right of asking questions, if somebody has their hand raised or having to sign up in advance to speak, you know, you just lose something when you're not in person. So I think part that was part of the reason when
did this framework cost money?
It cost, it was between $60,000 and $70,000 is what the district spent on it.
Okay.
And so that was kind of a tipping point for me, was because I was familiar with Brett Weinstein, and then I was somewhat familiar with Portland Public Schools and the decline they've seen in both their student population as well as test scores and truancy rates. So that's when I started getting involved, because before that I was not involved at all in really school stuff beyond my own children.
Do you have kids at that time currently in school? Is that how you found out about the low test scores?
At that time, I did. I mean, during that time, just to bring kind of everyone back, is that I believe all the schools in the nation for a little while, the kids were pushed out of school. And at that time, the students at our school were going at least in the junior high and high school, they were going every other day. So, and the thought behind that was like, it gives them, you know, additional space within the classrooms to separate out students. So you've got A day and B day students, and then a day of cleaning. So some students like went Monday, Thursday, and then Tuesday, Friday, and then Wednesday was a day to clean. So that was it. That happened during that time frame that the kids in the junior high and high and high school weren't even full time in schools. And my kids were actually not in school at that time. I did actually homeschool them with a homeschool co-op that year.
Maybe you probably don't know this, but I live in the same community as Elizabeth does. And I never heard of the low test scores until just recently. How did you get that information? Are they making this public? I don't see much of this being publicized. Yeah.
It isn't heavily publicized, no. And I think in part because I'm a business owner, I just am curious and I don't stop until I find things. But the really nice thing about the state of Minnesota is it does, we do publish our grades, attendance, the test scores on the Minnesota standardized test. Those are published, as well as the truancy rates for all our schools are published on a state site. So you can go ahead and look those up. And in addition to that, I looked up how to do Minnesota data requests, and I have done data requests of the state of Minnesota for district data, as well as our local school as well. So anybody can look up how to do it. You can just go to your state and put in data requests. They're sometimes called FOIA, Freedom of Information Act requests. But you can look at things such as things that I've looked for in the past are people enrolled in AP classes. I wanted to see if our science, technology, engineering, and math AP classes had the same enrollment as before. You can look at different disparities, again, on that state site. I've looked at attendance rates by grades. Anything you can really think of asking, as long as there's data for it, you can get from your school.
Yeah, and I know we're getting kind of off topic about bullying here, but I promise listeners we are getting to it. Is Elizabeth, once you start poking around of asking questions, why? Well, first of all, what was the first thing you approached your community with as a concern?
Oh, I attended those first meetings about the equity framework was probably the first time I really became involved. I regularly write letters to the editor at my local newspaper. And one of my first letters was entitled The Pain We Feel. And it was about how sometimes we as a person can feel so much pain that it becomes difficult to see other people's pain. And I wrote that because as a community advocate, I call and I knock on doors. I am out there. And what I'm finding is it's not just our students. It's a lot of our professionals. Like you go, of course, our teachers feel that way. But another population of people that feel unheard is our doctors and our nurses and our healthcare professionals. So when I wrote that letter, I was really thinking of them and hoping that maybe people would take a step back and think, well, gosh, you know, I'm having a bad day, but potentially, you know, maybe the pain I feel is preventing me from having empathy and understanding the pain other people feel.
You poked around somewheres that got somebody upset.
Yeah. And so that did lead me down the path of looking at curriculum. And actually, there was a curriculum concern brought to my attention by one of my daughter's friends. So it wasn't my daughter's class. It was one of my daughter's friends, their class. There was a white supremacy triangle that said things like colorblindness was a form of white supremacy, or believing that that every one is equal is a form of white supremacy.
Hold on. Wait. What did the schools hand out, like a document or a picture?
And so
I don't understand. What is this thing that they handed out to teachers?
What is this? This was only this was really an enlightening experience for me, because one thing I found is that you can have an entire district. So we have two high schools in our district, and one high school may have approved this curriculum and another high school did not. So there might be more centralized approach at different districts, but at our particular district, you might find that the two different high schools have very different curriculum. And
well, okay, that's a topic for a different conversation.
Yes. So sense. It wasn't in every class. It was in one English 10 class. Right. And it was presented along with a book, but it really didn't discuss the book at all. So that was kind of their argument, was that this book was a good resource and thus they can use this triangle. And I'm like, no, this is two separate issues. You know, we're combining two different things. I'm okay with the book. I had no problem with the book, and I couldn't care less about the book. It was this triangle, which had some legitimate concerns. You know, it said things that everybody would find as discriminatory, such as, you know, being a member of the KKK is a form of white supremacy. But it also would say things like, again, that colorblindness was also a form of a different form, but a form of white supremacy. And although we obviously all see in color, of course, that's not what it means. You know, what it means to me is that obviously you don't think of people differently based on their skin color. And so it was actually a student that brought this to me. And then I did a curriculum complaint because the student was too afraid to do so.
I guess I'm way out of the loop in a lot of things. I never heard the term color blindness. I was looking at a person's skin color, I guess, because I work with kids every day. I just see kids as kids. I don't see nothing else. And just like my younger kids, they see my younger daughter's in a classroom that's kind of diverse, and she sees kids as kids. I don't know. First of all, I don't understand why there has to be a something to be brought into a school system to create division right away. And there may not even been a problem, but you created a problem because now you got kids thinking, oh, wait a minute, this person might only like me because I'm this way, or they might not like me because of this way. Then you get, now you're putting thoughts into kids' heads that were not even there in the first place.
Yeah. And I think that was a larger part of the conversation, wasn't just on the curriculum, but the fact that there were students that had concerns and they didn't feel that they could have them addressed. And so that becomes the larger issue, is why
they would probably be addressed. They would be called racist if they did.
Yes. And the teacher that was using that curriculum, she was a newer teacher, and she was not renewed the following year. So I don't know if that curriculum, I don't think it's being used any longer in our district, but I believe that the larger issue is that the students don't feel like they had anyone to advocate to, right? They obviously, the teacher liked this curriculum, so not the teacher. But even in that case, there's, of course, fabulous teachers. And we also have some bad ones. But if you end up with a bad one, you should at least feel that there is somebody else within the school you can advocate to in order to get help. And so that was, you know, the overwhelming message I would have liked for the community and our school board to understand. And as far as like problems that I had, occasionally, you know, I would get, you know, Facebook messages that were somewhat threatening, or, you know,
So hold on. Let's talk about this now. So now here comes the bullying part of this whole conversation piece. Now we have a nice good backstory.
Yeah.
So you stuck up for a piece of curriculum that, did the school board approve that curriculum to be taught, or did the teacher just thought she could do it anyways?
So how it was approved, from my understanding, talking to the building principal, was that different departments can approve their own curriculum. So it was locally approved by a department. And the school board can approve or deny curriculum, thus the curriculum complaint. Okay. But in this case, prior to the curriculum complaint, they may have been unaware. I'm not sure.
Okay. So because you've done that, your local newspaper ran a story about that, about you bringing that attention public. What were the repercussions of this now?
You know, and again, like privately, people would message and maybe call me names. I had actually posted the article to a mom's group on Facebook, and people who ran the mom's group were being harassed by community members and threatened. And
so they were upset at you for, I'm lost.
The people that were threatening the moderators of the Facebook group wanted the Facebook group to take my post down because I posted the curriculum complaint as well as the curriculum that was being taught. And so there were people, activists, that were actually harassing the moderators. And so I think that's another part of like the social media harassment. And when we see things getting removed from Facebook sites, sometimes it's not like this big overlord complex removing things. It's just that like real people, regular people run these Facebook groups and they're not typically used to being harassed. So when somebody or a few people decide to send messages about how awful they are allowing this curriculum to be up on their website and allowing discussion, that is very scary if you haven't been part of it.
My opinion on, especially when it comes to curriculum, like our first focus should be writing, math, history, science. That's it. Once those scores get up there, then maybe offer different classes, which is fine in my opinion. But when you're offering something that creates division, or you're offering something that can be putting thoughts into young kids' minds that weren't even there, that's a valid complaint to bring up. Because it's not like a kid brought that up, a teacher brought that into the school. You had a valid complaint and now you're getting hate for it.
And it wasn't necessarily just me that was getting hate. It was also the moderators of this Facebook group. And then they shot me the messages like, we're a free speech site. We put this, you know, space together to be free speech, but we're having trouble advocating for free speech because this is scary. It's kind of what they said. And they did end up leaving it up, and it was fine.
And the moderators just blocked those people making threats, because that's what you should do.
Yep. They did. They eventually did, you know, they initially wanted to have it be, like I said, a free speech site, but here are a couple people, and it's such a small minority. And I think from running a business too, like you have 99% of your customers are just fantastic people, and you have 1 or 2% that can be difficult. And those 1 or 2% are the people that you remember, right? But you shouldn't let them ruin your day. And it's kind of a similar situation. You have Facebook groups of thousands of people, and a couple people start harassing you, you know, it can feel overwhelming. But in all honesty, it's just a couple people just block them and move on.
Yeah, that's fine because you'll probably never hear from those people again. But the part I'm really interested about is the elected official who you managed to pick off about this. What did that person do?
You know, and I got called just a lot of just generally names saying that I wasn't being empathetic, that I'm being bigoted. And honestly, and I hope I did a good job. It's really hard when people are calling you names to stay calm. Because eventually the curriculum complaint did go to a committee where I did sit in front of the school board and some cabinet members, you know, give my rundown of everything that's happened and why I believe that this curriculum is inappropriate, right? And so you're sitting in front of them and you're giving the, and you know, it's hard to face that criticism, but the big thing is just staying as calm as possible and making sure that my language doesn't match theirs, because most of the people that believe things differently than I do are not in that belief because they're bad people. Even though the things that they believe might hurt me, or in this case, there were students that felt discriminated against, it hurt them. The big thing is that they don't see other people's hurt. So it kind of goes back to that original article I did, that sometimes you feel so much hurt, you can't see other people's hurt. And if I became as upset, or if I used language like they used, then it becomes much harder for them to see the pain other people are in. And so I really tried to stay calm. And ultimately, I did not see any change in my business. I mean, I didn't go to these meetings saying that, hey, I am this person from this business. So, I mean, I don't go being representing my whole business or anything, but it's easy enough to see the businesses I own and who I am. And I have not seen any dip in sales, business sales at all. And so for the other people who have gone through this or who are doctors or teachers and are going through this currently or don't know how to advocate for themselves, I've just found that the benefits outweigh the negatives. And in the moment, it feels really, really scary and really, really painful, but it always pays out a little bit at the end.
How are things right now for you? I know you're still advocating for kids and fighting. How are things right now?
You know, I do take steps away from any type of advocacy because it can become overwhelming and it's hard to see the light through some of the darkness at times. And it's really important to have that perspective. So sometimes when I feel too overwhelmed, I do just get off of social media, go for more walks, focus on the things that give me joy. Like I have a motorcycle. It's cold here, so I can't run it very much. But going on a motorcycle ride, going for your walks, taking that step back, because these problems, all the bullying problems and issues, they're not going away tomorrow. So if I take a step away for a month or 2 months, they're going to be there when I get back. And so it is. I have taken a step back to give myself perspective so I can come back with a fresh set of ideas and then also keep that calm, because I take a step away when I feel like I'm losing my calm, which happens.
Elizabeth, I love all what you're saying. If people want to get a hold of you or connect with you, how can they do that?
You can Google search Elizabeth Hanke, Minnesota. I'll probably pop up. There is an Elizabeth Hanke that is also an economist, I think, at the Heritage Society when I'm doing my own Google searches. I volunteer time with the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism. I think Coleman Hughes, Abigail Schreier are all members on the board. And so you can also email me at elizabeth.hanke@fairforall.org and get a hold of me that way.
And how do you spell all that?
FAIR is F-A-I-R, just FAIR. And it does stand for the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism, We have different members throughout the country. Certainly, if you find curriculum and that is inappropriate within your school, there is a site called Fair Transparency, and you can make reports. So, and that goes for if you've been discriminated against, regardless of race, you can go ahead and do a Fair Transparency report, and they do have lawyers that will follow up with you. And sometimes it's legal action, and they'll partner with a local law firm. And sometimes it's just simply helping you advocate and writing documents for you, or helping you learn how to do FOIA requests to get more information. But it's just F-A-I-R, FAIR, and then for all is FORALL.org, FAIR for All.
Okay. And your last name is H-A-N-K-E. That's kind of what I was getting at.
Oh, Elizabeth Hankey, H-A-N-K-E.
Yes.
Sorry about that.
I will include your email into the show notes. Again, Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming on today.
I appreciate you having me on, Tim. Thank you.
And for myself, you can always find us at our very own website, which is www.breakingbullying.com. You can also reach out to us at our email address if you have a story of your own bullying to share, or for whatever reason you want to get a hold of us. Our email address is breakbullyinghere@gmail.com. Now, if you're a victim of bullying and you don't know where to turn, there is online resources to help you. The first is the government's very own anti-bullying website, and the address is www.stopbullying.gov. And other online resource is www.pacer.org/bullying. Now, if you have had thoughts of suicide or of self-harm, we implore you to stop. Reach out to the National Suicide Hotline. That number is very simple. It's 988. I'm Tim Flynn, and thank you for listening, and we will be back next week to continue the conversation to break the silence on bullying.